Welcome to Made in Science, the official podcast of the University of Stuttgart. Today, I have a starting question for our audience. When was the last time that you actually gave in to a marketing strategy for a product or something else? Frankly, to me, this happens all the time. And I guess we may not be always aware of it, but this regards also our audience. Luckily, there is help around to understand why this is the case. Our guest today is Professor Christina Kühnel, Chair of Marketing at the Institute of Business Administration at the University of Stuttgart. Her research is on digital communication, language and leadership, and customer experience, using large data sets and modern methods. We will try to connect how attention is created, how experience is measured, and what that means for leadership and teaching. Welcome to Made in Science, Professor Kühnel.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very curious and looking forward to this interview.
I understand that there are different definitions of marketing regarding, for instance, activities, relations, goals, and leadership. What is your definition of marketing?
That's an excellent question. Let me start first with letting our audience know that marketing is not only advertisement, because that's typically what people think about when they hear marketing, right? So originally, we were thinking about marketing in terms of the marketing mix, which are the four P's: price, place, promotion, and product, right? So, for example, the idea is that for marketing, we want to create value for the customer. We do so by delivering ideas what the customer needs by market research, for example. And we do then help engineers to transform this knowledge into products, new products, to better address customer needs and to deliver value to the customer in the end. But this also comes with a price tag. So the idea is, what is the customer willing to pay for such a product? It's not, we have developed the product and now this gets the price tag, so on and so on. But we now think, what actually is the customer willing to pay? Because if the customer is willing to pay, then he or she also will buy the new product, right? Irrespective of the value that the product is delivering. In addition to that, you mentioned awareness, right? So for sure, customers need to be made aware that there's a new product. That's promotion, right? But it's all not only advertisement in the sense that you see a YouTube video or an advertisement in the radio or in a newspaper, but also influencer marketing, for example, guerrilla marketing and so on. All this belongs to marketing. And finally, there is place, which means that if you want to buy a product, you do that, for example, at a local store, in an online shop, e-commerce, or mobile phone, right? So it's also about making the product available to the customer and in those channels that the customer wants to get the product to make it more convenient for the customer. So these are the four P's. But let me think a little bit broader. So marketing, in my perspective, it's also about market-oriented management. That means that the entire company serves the customer, which means that the entire departments within a company think about the customer. Every decision made in a company reflects on the customer. How can we serve the customer? This means that, for example, there's an anecdote that Jeff Bezos, the former CEO of Amazon, he has put an empty chair into every decision or into every decision that has to be made within an office, so that the customer, even though he was not present in person, takes part into decision making. And this also leads not only, as I said, to the four P's, but in terms of thinking, right? You want to serve the customer, which means in the long term, you will have happier customers, more loyal customers, and they will talk positively about your company, which means that there is very authentic, credible word of mouth. And this helps, right? And this actually is marketing to me. It's not only the four P's, not only advertisement, but the mindset, the strategic thinking, the strategic orientation to serve the customer. And then hopefully the company or the institution will become more successful.
You have mentioned the customer. a couple of times. Now, I wonder, over time and also today, is the customer certainly not a stable entity? In your work, in your experience as a researcher, what has changed about the customer? We are not stable, I would assume, as customers.
Definitely. So let me start with distinguishing between two different broad types of customers. First of all, we do have the persons, the individuals, like you and me, who want to buy a sneaker, for example. That's what we call business-to-consumer marketing, right? In the opposite, we also do have organizations, institutions like the University of Stuttgart that needs to buy a new office chair, for example, right? So this is what we call business-to-business marketing. And for all those different kind of customers, for sure, it's not stable what we think in terms of customers, but more rather it's dynamic in the sense that there's more information around. Customers have more power, they gain more power because of the transparency and information exchange, right? Previously, a long time ago, there was no internet, right? So customers, they went to the shopping center, they saw a price and okay, that's, I have to deliver, I have to pay if I want to get this jacket, for example. Right now, probably most of us, they check on their mobile phone the best price, right? They check it maybe online and buy in store if it's cheaper or the very opposite around. And the same goes also for business to business, right? So we do have social media. You could buy even online or in mobile phone. So the power that the customer has and the company has to respond to, that's very, very dynamic, right? And also with the help of Gen AI, generative artificial intelligence, there's so much going on in terms of the information and transparency that the customer has today compared to several decades ago that, yeah, we have to think and reflect who actually is the customer and how can we best target this customer.
I'm very glad to hear that I'm dynamic. So that puts a whole new perspective on myself. But apart from that, what are some of the truths and perhaps also some of the myths about marketing?
Mm-hmm. So let's start with the myths, I guess. That's easiest. The first we already discussed, that marketing is only advertisement. So I clarified, hopefully successfully, that marketing is much more than only advertisement. That's the very first myth that comes to mind. Also, we discussed who's the customer. Typically, when we think about marketing, it's like the big brands, Apple, Amazon, and so on. You typically will think about B2C customers, right? So that's the individuals that buy products. But for sure, there's also marketing in business-to-business context, right? So the university markets it for itself, and that's B2B typically, right? Or in the companies located here in this area, most of them are in the business-to-business context because they sell to other industries, to other companies or institutions. That's the second myth. In addition, let me explain that typically, one would probably think, okay, if marketing is only advertisement, that costs a lot. But that's not true. We give back, or we want to give back because we want to offer value to the customer. Then the customer pays for this product. If he or she is very happy with the customer, there will be a higher willingness to pay it, certainly. So you can get more money from your customers. And this also creates value to the company, right? It's not only that we spend money, but we help to gain money, to make money, right? So these are typically the three most important ones that comes to mind, right, in terms of the myths about marketing. So let me summarize in terms of the two. So marketing is about to create value for the customer, right? And this value can either be a lower price tag, more or higher quality of a product, for example, the delivery, the availability of a product in a mobile context, for example, like social commerce, you see an Instagram post and then you can directly buy the product. But also in terms of communication, right? What I said, that we used user-generated content for example, which means that we use reviews on interview or platforms about products to get more information what the customer actually needs. And this altogether helps to better serve the customer.
In this very complex and interdisciplinary field of marketing, What guides your research here at the University of Stuttgart?
So you already mentioned interdisciplinary. So that's definitely for sure something that guides my research, especially, but not only at the University of Stuttgart. When I was an assistant professor, I was a recipient of the Robert Bosch Foundation. They provided a scholarship for female scholars in the fast lane, and this was for the interdisciplinary track. So I was the only business economist within this group, just female scholars. I think we were about 20 female scholars, and I was the only one. And from business administration or business economics, everybody else was from STEM, right? So maths and engineering and so on. And we had kind of a very good discussion about what is actual interdisciplinary research. And we got help and support how to do the negotiation, presentation training and so on. This was very, very helpful. And also in terms of understanding different cultural background, cultural in the sense of educational culture, right? And to have negotiations and discussions with those. How does this contribute right now to my current research? So it helped me to get even more open-minded, thinking about different perspectives, different educational backgrounds, and also about insights that we can use for marketing. Because marketing is rather an applied science, let's call it that way. We do not create a medicine to help overcome a disease, for example, or we do not build a new plane or something, right? So, but we rather use the knowledge from different disciplines like psychology, for example, that's what I use quite often, and transfer it to the consumer context or to the customer context, right? To be more specific, for example, in one of my past research, we used the idea from architecture, but also from design thinking, forms follows function, for example, or I know that there's also discussion going on that it's the other way around. But we build on that, for example, and we use that and think about how do customers actually perceive new products, right? And more specifically, the design of new products. And this helped us to better understand that there's something missing in the discussion from a consumer perspective. So we thought, okay, let's do some interviews, be open-minded and ask the customers what they think about. And we found out, for example, that there's also a symbolic dimension of new product design, right? In my current work, for example, I was recipient of the Terra Incognita scholarship here at the University of Stuttgart, which means that we also had to do interdisciplinary research. And for doing so, I worked together with a computer scientist professor. We were interested in about CEO communication, right? So that's the starting point. But then we continued to transfer this to social cognition. And then this helped us to better understand, and that's a current or ongoing research project I'm currently working on, to better understand how social media audiences and professional networks understand the top management communication and whether there is a gender bias. But very shortly. So that's one thing, that's the interdisciplinary thing. That's the first point. Second, there's a common saying, or not a common saying, but a most established saying by Peter Drucker. He's a very famous management professor, and he says, if you cannot measure it, you cannot manage it, right? And this certainly guides my research, because quite often I have developed scales for surveys. That means that we thought about questions that you could put into a survey, which are reliable and also valid. We tested this with huge data sets, and this is something that comes across in quite a lot of my research projects. Nowadays, I must admit that I do not do that happily research with service anymore, because nobody wants to reply, to be honest. But we rather use secondary data. That means that we look at existing data sets. We scrape these data sets from Twitter or X today, but also from review platforms. And then we use this more realistic, more real-time data sets to do our, what we, it's not scale development, but to measure something, right? So, for example.
This would be like likes and comments and shares along these lines.
Definitely, right. So, and that's a third point I want to make. So typically, we observe something in the world, right? Like, for example, a consumer behavior phenomenon or in a business context. And that's what I'm actually interested in. So I focus pretty much not only in my teaching, but also in my research about the exchange with business practice. So I talk to my colleagues in the industry and talk with them and discuss what they're interested in, right? And sometimes something pops up that I'm interested in, that what I'm getting excited about, and then there a new research idea starts, right? And if there are a team that I can make up to work on it, that truly happens. So these are more or less the three founding guidelines for my research.
Yeah, I like it that we are influenced and get ideas from when we look around, basically. Happens in my work all the time and normally leads to results as well. Now, you mentioned regarding language and leadership that you studied gender effects in digital communication, I think, by comparing language styles that male versus female top managers use. How does this look like? What did you investigate exactly? And how do you define visibility?
Okay, that's a wonderful question. So it's an ongoing research topic. So I cannot give you concrete results because it's still ongoing for sure. So what we did so far, we used what is called which originates from social cognition, and it's called the Big Two, right? So that's how people in general perceive and judge human beings. And the big twos are agency and communion, right? So agency refers to the personality traits that deals with ambition, success, self-independence, and so on, whereas communion rather deals with the traits like cooperation, harmony, caring for each other, and cooperation. So now there comes the stereotypes. Typically, we feel and judge people based on those two traits. But for sure, everybody can have both traits. But in terms of stereotypes, we assume, or prior research has shown, that men are more associated with agentic traits, whereas females are in general more associated with communal traits. And this also, for sure, comes to a leadership context where top managers, by nature, must be very self-confident, self-independent. They strive for success. And this means that leaders in general, they are rather associated or seen or judged by agentic traits. So now we also have female top managers, and now with their stereotype comes into place, because we do have the female top managers, they are supposed, because of their position, be more agentic, but because of their gender, they have the kind of double-edged sword. How should they behave also in terms of how they post, for example, in social media platforms, right? How do they reflect and publish their content? That's what we are interested in. And now that's the top management aspect we are interested in, because top managers, they are brand ambassadors, right? That means that they function as kind of influencer for free for the companies, because they communicate the values of their companies. And also this increases the visibility personally for the person by themselves, but also for the company for sure, right? And now what we are interested in and we have found so far is that there's a gender effect that in general, female top managers receive less visibility, irrespective of the language style. That could be either agentic or communal, right? But in general, female top managers, they receive less retweets. So in addition to that, they are punished when they use an agentic language style compared to their male counterparts, which means that even though they are top managers, and if they comply with this role and using an agentic language style, this harms them rather, whereas this is not true for the male top managers, right? And why is this important? We feel because of the visibility, female top managers, they are rare compared to male top managers by themselves. And if they gain less visibility, this is a vicious cycle, a downward vicious cycle, because they receive less visibility and so on. And in addition to that, on top, nowadays, all the big corporations in Silicon Valley, or most of them in Silicon Valley, they use those insights for large language model development, for training. So, and this will have an impact, a bias on the algorithm they develop. Because right now, if they have less visibility, this will feed into the training data set of those large language models. And this getting is even worse, right? And that's why we are kind of not happy to figure this out, to be honest, but we feel that it's important to be aware of that, because again, if we don't help and do something against it, it will continue in the future as well, right? And it's getting worse.
Interesting, very interesting. Combination, especially when you relate to the language models and the algorithms that are now as we are talking, basically, take the models that are used today. Now, from that complex background, I would like to go back to the digital communication that you also mentioned earlier. What is the relevance of digital communication in marketing today? Where do you see it going? Is also a question. I'm from a different field. I'm aware that I think in Munich, a theater production was now done with one of those AI glasses, and the audience basically immersed into on many, many levels into the play, but it was a very different experience. You would not sit in the in a theater room as such. You would not be watching a stage production, you'd be all over the place. I wonder, will that happen to me as a customer when we talk about digital communication and marketing and advertising?
Okay, that's a very good question. Let me start with trying to explain that the boundaries between what I explained before, the four P's we did had promotion and place. These boundaries, they will kind of blur, right? So because right now, for example, if what I mentioned before, if you have a look at an Instagram feed and you see, for example, a nice jacket, you can immediately buy it. So seeing the advertisement or the person, the influencer wearing a jacket, that would be what we call promotion communication, right? But if you now can immediately buy the product, that would be place, like delivery, right? So that's the online shop or the mobile commerce shop. So these boundaries, they are blurring. And on top of that, this happens quite often. So there's a kind of tendency, a kind of, switch rather from the offline to the online world, especially for the younger generation. If I look at our office here right now, the both of us, we do have the smartphones, the three of us, we do have the smartphones next to us. Mobile commerce, for example, that's omnipresent. And that's something that what we examine in customer experience management, that's a research area I'm interested in as well. So where we see that most of the interaction are now switching to the online world, let's say online world to be more, a little bit broader, but for sure that must be most of them digital, right? Digital interactions. But you definitely will see that. And what you just mentioned in terms of the theater, for sure that there will be tools, digital tools or Gen AI tools that we use to produce innovative experiences that you might have not expected beforehand. That gives you a little bit of surprise moments. And this is because customers typically, they want to have those surprise moments. They cherish that. Not everybody, but being a little bit innovative, that could help to continue being relevant, right? And in terms of theaters, I'm not too sure how many younger people are happy to go to the theater. But if you make it a little bit modern in the terms that what they are interested in with the technologies that makes it a little bit, let's call it fancy, then they will attract also different target groups. And I'm pretty sure that this will happen in the future as well, that there will be innovative moments, innovative tools implemented in addition to, let's call it, the more traditional way of watching or going to the theater, right?
Let's stay in the real world for a moment, but go somewhere else, perhaps. Actually, you went somewhere else. You were a visiting scholar at the Marshall School of Business at the University of Southern California in LA, and also at VU Amsterdam. Now, what experiences did you take away from those stays? In other words, when you just said you will be surprised sometimes by encountering something new, what surprised you? And how did it affect you as a researcher and lecturer also here in your work?
So let me start with my very first research visit at USC Marshall School of Business, which dated a long time ago, let's call it that way. So I was running interviews in Silicon Valley. At that time, as I said, it's a long time ago, Silicon Valley, I mean, it was well known for sure for innovation, for startups and so on, but it was not that popular in Europe at that time. And I was running interviews with startup entrepreneurs, big corporation vice presidents. And what I was most surprised of is the accessibility, approachability. So I contacted more or less randomly people via LinkedIn, and they replied, right? And they invited me over to have a coffee and a chat. Some even spent 2 hours with me to do the interview. Some invited me for a campus tour at Stanford University. Some introduced me to other people with whom I was able to run interviews. That's something I have never experienced before in Europe or in Germany. So that's definitely something that surprised me at large, right? In addition to that, what I learned is the idea of thinking big. Right. So that's typical of Silicon Valley. I would say that don't go for the small thing, but think big and try to fulfill your promises. And that's what when we discussed what my research is guided by. So it's about real phenomenon, but not small ones, but rather what we discussed about the gender biases or potential gender biases in social media. That's a rather big issue. Could become a big issue. Right now, we only look at manager, but this could also be conveyed to university context, to every agentic context, right? And then that's thinking big, right? So we start small, but then we try to deliver into a bigger context. That's certainly something. And also this, like, yeah, what I said, accessibility, not only in terms of my interview partners, but also in terms of meeting professors, different, open culture, I would say, that surprised me at that point of time, certainly, yeah.
And once again, how would you, or how do you actually use this background and the experiences and fuel it into the education here in the curricula, in meetings, I don't know, whatever you encounter, and what we call university life?
Definitely. So, for example, I just mentioned the interviews I was conducting in Silicon Valley. So I use this as an example how you can badly run an interview. in my method class, for example, when we talk about qualitative research, because I had one interview where I had to deliver all the questions beforehand to my interview partner. And this interview partner, he just learned by heart. I didn't know the answers. And it was a monologue. It was not an interview. And that's why I said it's a bad example. So that's, for example, definitely which directly influences it. But also in terms of for my PhD students, when I was visiting scholar 2 years ago at the VU Amsterdam, so they had this kind of lab meetings, for example, which means that almost every or each second week, the PhD students gathered together and they were talking about their the progress in their PhD studies, right? So this is something I try to transfer also to my students nowadays so that they... I'm reading regular with them, but not in a bigger group. So now they have to deliver and also to present, and then they get challenged a little bit more. And this helps to reflect even more strongly on their research. That's for the PhDs, for example. But also in terms of inspiring students, I would say that's something I learned from my academic advisor at USC Marshall School of Business. He was so passionate and still is passionate about his job and also about marketing, right? And he's doing research at the intersection marketing and innovation management. So he is the chair of the Center for Global Innovation, and he's so inspiring, right? And I tried to do a little bit to be similar to him, but yeah, to inspire my students and make them excited about marketing, right? So that's certainly that, had an impact on me.
See, it's certainly a university that offers a creative environment, not only because of the cinema industry close to it, but also writers, many writers that I teach are also well-located one time or another, also great colleagues. Special greetings to Charles Berryman at this moment. But coming back to the work here, please, one of the specialities, I guess, here in Stuttgart is a subject called technology-oriented business administration. In that particular area, I always found that a little, I don't know, difficult is not the word, but when I mention it at student fairs abroad, students wouldn't know really what this is all about. Can you help me to explain?
Yes, certainly. I'm more than willing to do so. And I'm glad to get rid of this potential confusion. So first of all, it's not a subject only, it's a study program. So it's much bigger than one single subject, right? So it's an entire study program. We have kind of invented, developed it 50 years ago. So 52 years ago, to be more correct. So 50 years ago, this was kind of introduced at the University of Stuttgart, which was the very first study program that combined ideas, contents from business administration and engineering, right? And I think everybody who's a little bit familiar with University of Stuttgart probably would not think first about business, but rather about engineering subjects, right? So, especially today, we feel that it's important for our students, for our graduates, to have not only the knowledge in business administration and economics, but also to be able to combine it with the engineering context, right? So that means those students in bachelor or master, they have to take classes both in business and in engineering courses to get them more prepared for their future context where they will probably work in, right? So that they have specific technical knowledge that they otherwise would be lacking, right?
Looking ahead a little bit now, say in 5 years, what do you want to build next and include in your work? And what would success look like for you?
That's a tough question, actually. For students, for sure, I would like to keep students continue being excited about marketing, but also to foster their critical learning, right? Because now we talked about marketing, we talked about Gen AI, so quite a lot of tools in marketing, they will be supported by Gen AI. And then critical thinking is even more important. And that's something I definitely would like to foster even stronger than I do today, to make our students be prepared for their future in such a world, right? Irrespective whether it's marketing or in general. In terms of research, for sure, let's think big. I would like to cooperate with companies in this area, but maybe also in Germany, whatever, to help them do their better in implementing the digital transformation. But right now we hear quite a lot about companies that struggle in the area because they are rather in the automotive industry and so on, right? They're less prepared for this digital transformation. And one point is not that they are lacking the strategy, but rather the implementation. And yes, we talked about the function of marketing. So that's value proposition, delivering value. But this does not necessarily mean that it's only about external customers, but it could also be internal customers. That means employees, right? So marketing could help, maybe, hopefully, to better implement this kind of digital transformation. That's something I'm really, really much interested in about the change that marketing could help or support or contribute to the implementation of digital transformation in this area, but also in Germany, for example.
The final part of our conversation is called Moment 7. Thank you. This comprises 7 questions, and please answer them in a short way. Moment 1. Spätzle or Maultaschen?
Maultaschen.
Moment 2. One thing you could change about the world would be?
Giving free and high-quality education to everybody, helping to reduce the risk of war.
Moment 3. Do you have a recommendation for a book or music or movie, theater, some museum visit perhaps?
So I'm living in Heilbronn. So for sure, I will recommend the Science Center Experimenta there. So we already visited with my PhD student. It's not only for kids, but also for elderly people, PhD students and us, for example. It's quite interesting. So just go and visit.
Moment 4. The best advice you have ever received was?
Do what you're passionate about.
Moment 5. Your favorite place here at the University of Stuttgart is?
Actually, the way between K2 and the lecture hall, provisorium, that's the way you're going there. That's what I really enjoy.
Moment 6. Please finish the sentence. If I could start all over again, I would do the following differently.
I would accept a position abroad.
Moment 7. Please complete also this sentence. Thanks to my studies, I know that...
human behavior is persistently irrational.
Professor Kühnel, thank you for having shared your insights in research, but also teaching, from sharing also your experiences when you were abroad, and giving us a glimpse of what may be upcoming for all of us in the world of marketing, and for making us aware that the language between genders differs, has an influence. Actually, when we look at it, comes all the way down to the product that we buy or don't buy. But it's not only about buying.
Thank you very much.
To our audience, thank you for your attention. Please stay also tuned for our next conversations that are always based on what is made in science.